This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's special guest is one of the most popular, prolific, and successful songwriters and composers of our time. His music is part of the soundtrack of our lives. He's written over 20 iconic top 10 hits recorded by some of the greatest music artists in the world, including I Cross My Heart by George Strait, Through the Years by Kenny Rogers, Take Good Care of My Heart by Whitney Houston, Higher Ground by Barbara Streisand, Miracle by Celine Dion, I Just Fall in Love Again by Anne Murray, Something Bigger Than Me by Dolly Parton, You've Been Leaving Me for Years by Willie Nelson, and believe me, I'm just scratching the surface. In addition to the stars I've just mentioned, his songs have been recorded by even more legends like Anthony Newley, Smokey Robinson, Ray Charles, Ringo Starr, Johnny Mathis, Tom Jones, Cher, Dusty Springfield, Melissa Manchester, Garth Brooks, and dozens more. He's composed over 40 movie scores, including 5 Clint Eastwood movies. And yes, he wrote the title songs from Every Which Way But Loose, recorded by Eddie Rabbit, and Any Which Way You Can, recorded by Glen Campbell. Some of his other big movies are Pure Country, Tin Cup, Honky Tonk Man, and Babe Ruth. And he wrote the score for the 2005 TV miniseries Elvis, starring Jonathan Rhys Meyers. He's written theme songs and music for classic TV shows, including Growing Pains, Murphy Brown, Murder, She Wrote, and Reba, to name only a few. He's composed the music for musical theater productions, including Josephine, The Josephine Baker Story, Lunch, Pure Country, and Say Goodnight, which is based on the love story of George Burns and Gracie Allen. He's also released 3 wonderful albums, You Set My Dreams to Music, It's Personal, and Pacific Sunrise. The list of awards and accolades our guest has received is jaw-dropping. 42 BMI Awards, 11 Billboard Awards, an American Music Award, 3 Grammy Award nominations, 6 Emmy Award nominations, the 2017 NSAI Songwriter of the Year Award, numerous Lifetime Achievement Awards, and in 2018, he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And most recently, he received the prestigious Trailblazer Award from the Society of Composers and Lyricists. And if all of that weren't enough, he also wrote a highly compelling and insightful memoir entitled, I Wrote That One Too, A Life in Songwriting from Willie to Whitney. This book is a must-read for every music lover. It's an eye-opening, poignant, intensely personal, and inspirational journey of perseverance, resilience, and the uplifting, healing power of creativity and music. I'm delighted and honored to welcome the incomparable Steve Dorff to our show. Steve, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Harvey. I'm exhausted just from listening to that introduction.
Well, you better get your energy back because I'm just getting started.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, it's great to see you.
And to see you too. I want to start the interview by picking a bone with Wikipedia. In the very first line of your Wikipedia page, it says you're a songwriter and composer whose work is mainly in the field of country music. You're so much more versatile than that, don't you think?
Absolutely. That whole Wikipedia thing, I don't know where they get their information from, but whatever.
You said in your book that being versatile has been both a blessing and a curse. What did you mean by that?
I think people tend to bag you when you whether you're an actor or a screenwriter, once you have success in one genre in music, people tend to pigeonhole you, which I think is the curse part, because I do think my versatility has been a big plus for me. The fact that I got to work with so many various artists in so many different genres has been my favorite part of my career. I think when you have a country hit, all of a sudden people bag you as, oh yeah, he wrote that country song. I don't ever really, when I sit down to write a song, I don't think about genre. I think about what the song says musically and lyrically. And whoever records the song or makes it famous, depending on what genre they're in, tends to put you in that bag. In other words, a song like I Cross My Heart, that was originally recorded by Bette Midler before George Strait ever heard it. And yet, it was voted the 9th greatest country love song ever written by CMT. So I guess that makes it a country song, which it clearly isn't.
Well, in my opinion, I think one of the things you've proven as a songwriter is that a really good song can be arranged and recorded in any genre.
I agree. Yep, absolutely. I've had numerous songs that have been done, examples of that.
Your early influences were Henry Mancini, Burt Bacharach, Dave Grusin, John Barry, The Beatles. And as I understand it, Steve, when you hear music, you close your eyes and you can see colors and shapes and bubbles moving in your mind. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a weird thing. It's a phenomenon that it's a crossbreeding of the senses that I guess 4% of the world's population experiences. Mine is, ever since I'm a kid, as far back as I can remember. When I close my eyes, I see these kind of plasmic bubbles, almost like in a lava lamp. And they go, but they go depth-wise instead of up and down. And they represent in some way the notes or the music I'm hearing. It's kind of a weird thing.
And as a young boy, you instinctively understood the mechanics of orchestration and song structure without getting any formal training, which is, I think, miraculous. And my question to you, Steve, is, do you think there was any advantage or benefit to you in not being classically trained as a musician?
That's a good question. I don't know. I wish that I was a better piano player. I think music training and lessons would have improved that technique. But in terms of the composition and in terms of the way I hear melodies, no, I don't think any training would have benefited me.
In your opinion, Steve, do you have to be a great musician to be a great songwriter or a great record producer?
No, I don't think so. I think, I can only speak for myself. I've been dreaming up melodies and hearing this little orchestra in my head since I'm an infant, and my mother tells me. So, and I never took any formal training. I read about orchestration in the library. When I felt like I was hearing these different instruments, I wanted to know what they were. And when I was watching on TV people playing these instruments, I wanted to see what the range they were. So yeah, I don't think formal training really would have benefited me in terms of being the songwriter or the composer I am. I think it would have helped me understand the mechanics maybe better.
We've had a lot of songwriters on our show: Paul Williams, Gilbert O'Sullivan, Judy Collins, Harriet Schock, Air Supply, Dire Straits, many others. And they've all said that sometimes a melody that became a hit song actually came to them in a dream. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, many times. Mm-hmm.
I think that's
I'm
just
not
amazing.
Sure if they were the hits, but I've dreamt songs that I went on to write. I'd get up in the middle of the night and just sing a melody that I've been dreaming about into my phone, and the next day listen to it. And sometimes I'd go, nah, that's just gibberish. But on occasion, I've written a couple of really good songs that came from nowhere.
I think that's just, it's otherworldly, really. I was just amazed to learn in your book that some of your most popular and successful songs were the easiest to write, and they came to you quickly, like Higher Ground, which you wrote in an hour. How does that happen?
I wish I could tell you. I wish I had the answer to that. I've been asked that. I've never been one to slave over a hot piano. The good ones have always come to me very quickly and very innately and instinctively when I hear a title or when I am moved by something that I'm visually seeing, it translates into music for me. So I don't spend a whole lot of time writing a song.
Well, when you've written a song, can you hear it fully arranged and orchestrated in your head?
Pretty much. Yeah, I hear it the way I do it. Now, I've had songs then recorded by other artists with different arrangements that I go, oh, wow, I never thought of that. I never would have thought of that, or a chord change or a variation of a chord. And that's always a nice surprise to me, because I can only imagine the arrangement that I would do.
Is it sometimes difficult to get the musicians and the producers to manifest what you've created in your head?
No, I've been very blessed to have been in the studio with some of the most amazing musicians on the planet, and they interpret what I do, whether I play it for them on the piano or whether I sing it to them, and they interpret it. You know, I've worked with these guys for so long that it's like shorthand.
You've worked with a number of brilliant lyricists that you've collaborated with. What are you looking for when you choose a lyricist to work with?
Again, I've been so blessed to have worked, you know, and they're all different, you know, and that the variety of the type of song I'll write with a John Bettis or with a Marty Panzer or with an Eric Kaz or Milton Brown, they're all different. The songs are all in their language. They have a specific signature to the way they write, and I think that's what draws me to them and musically suggests the different approaches I take with the different lyricists I've worked with.
Now, you've known my friend Melissa Manchester forever. She's recorded three of your songs, Fire in the Morning, Any Kind of Fool, and Why Fall at All. But I don't think you've ever written a song with her, have you?
No, never wrote with Melissa. We've known each other since we're 16 years old. Actually, you left one out because it was never released. But one of the first songs I ever had demoed was a song that her brother-in-law produced called Say Goodbye. And Melissa, who was, I think, 16 or 17, sang the demo. I wish I had a copy of it. I don't have a copy of it anywhere. But that's how far back Melissa and I go.
You've written and talked about what it feels like when you hear one of your songs sung by a singer you've admired your whole life. Like, for example, Barbara Streisand brought you to tears in the studio three times. But have you ever refuse to let a big star record one of your songs because you just don't think the song is right for them?
No. If a big star wants to record my song, I always let them. I'm sometimes not happy with the result, but songwriting is, you know, it's a tough thing, and to have a great artist or a big star say, hey, I want to record one of your songs. I've had songs recorded by actors that, you know, that weren't known for their singing. And it's always kind of fun. You know, John Travolta recorded one of my songs. A lot of TV actors that did albums recorded songs of mine. And it's always fun.
I know you were very starstruck when you worked with Ringo Starr, but have there been other stars that really made you tongue-tied and turned you into a fanboy?
Quite a few. Anthony Newley comes to mind, Tom Jones, Streisand, of course.
Well, speaking of legends, you wrote about a notorious all-night recording session with Dusty Springfield and made me wonder, were there other singers who were eccentric in the recording studio like that?
Oh yeah, plenty. You know, artists are eccentric's a good word. I think I'll stick with that word as opposed to a couple other that came to mind. Yeah, I think, but that's what makes them great is, you know, that each one of them brings something unique in addition to the uniqueness of their voice.
Well, I want to say to my viewers, if you haven't yet read Steve Dorff's book, the chapter about Dusty Springfield is well worth the price of the book just right there. So, Steve, here's a bit of a personal question for you. When you look at your rather difficult childhood and your parents' turbulent, tempestuous relationship, don't you think it's amazing that you have such an incredible talent for writing love songs?
Well, I think my love of music and my God-given talent is what was a survival for me. It's what carried me through my life and still does.
So music was a coping mechanism for you in many ways, emotionally.
Oh, totally.
Well, I want to quote you something you wrote in your book. You said, "Some of my favorite songs and what I personally consider to be my best work came from the romantic roller coasters of my life, the love, heartbreak, pain, joy, disillusion, hopefulness, forgiveness, and regret." So, Steve, let me ask you this. Is it easier to write songs when you're in love or when you're heartbroken?
I think both. I think, I always write from experience. I think every song I've ever written comes from a personal experience, or at least that's the jumping off place. And then for me, writing a song that's going to be successful, it has to be relatable to Bob and Mary in Des Moines, Iowa. They have to hear that song and say, "Wow, that's the story of our life." Or if it's a sad song or a broken hearted song, you've got to reach that person that's going through something. So I wouldn't say my songs are exactly what my life's been about, but the jumping off place usually comes from personal experience.
Well, you have a way of writing melodies that get into the heart. The melodies, putting aside the lyrics, the melodies have a hook that somehow make you feel emotional. I've listened to your songs, just the melodies, and you can get goosebumps. You can get teary-eyed.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Now, your song, I Just Fall in Love Again, has been recorded by Karen Carpenter, Dusty Springfield, and Anne Murray. There's even a duet with Anne Murray and Dusty Springfield. Do you have a favorite version of that song?
That's like asking me who's my favorite child, I think they're all uniquely special. That song's been recorded another 40 times by 40 other artists around the world and in certain other languages. But of course, those three versions are the special ones that really, really made this came alive. The Carpenters version was a big orchestral version, and of course, Karen had a voice like no one else. But so does Dusty, and so does Anne. So the short answer to your question is no, I don't have a favorite version. They're all my favorites.
I think Karen Carpenter had the perfect pop voice. If there ever was a perfect pop voice, in my opinion, it was her, don't you think?
Oh yeah, so she and Celine, their voices are just magical. They're like musical instruments.
Your song, I Cross My Heart from the movie Pure Country, went to number one. As you mentioned, it was listed by CMT as the ninth greatest country love song ever written. Why in the world was it not nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song?
Because Bette Midler had recorded it 8 years previously, and to be nominated or eligible for an Oscar, it has to be written specifically for that film.
What a crazy rule, because that was the best song from any movie of that year, or for that matter, that decade.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I don't disagree.
Your musical theater production about Josephine Baker had its world premiere in Florida in 2016. Are there any plans to bring the show to Broadway?
Not at the present time. For many reasons. Theater is a whole different bag of tricks, as they say. All the stars have to line up for something like that to happen. I'm most excited about a new show that I have, which is called Say Goodnight, and it's the love story of George Burns and Gracie Allen. And that will debut next year in Dallas, Texas, and then move to the West End of London.
And maybe after that, Broadway.
Hopefully.
I want to go to the opening with you and Lynn.
There you go.
Now, Eric Kaz once told you, Steve, that your body of work is like an iceberg because only 20% of your songs will ever be heard or recorded. How does that feel, knowing that some of your best work possibly will never see the light of day?
I think that's true for any songwriter. And yeah, Eric, who's a dear friend and a great songwriter, came up with that analogy. Yeah, it's an iceberg. You really only see 15, 20% of it above water, and yet the other 80% no one ever sees. And I think it's true with a catalog of work of songs. The ones that everybody knows are the hits, and the ones that have either slipped through the cracks or never found the right artist, nobody gets to ever hear those.
Well, when I read that in your book, I thought, yes, but with climate change, an iceberg can melt, and your songs are never going to melt away.
Well, the good news is that I'm constantly going back to songs that I always loved that for one reason or another didn't find their artist home. Always trying to redemo or rethink artists that could do a certain song that I haven't given up on.
You know, when I read your book, Steve, and I read about all the rejections and some of the bitter disappointments you've endured in the music business, it made me want to ask you, where do you think your resilience comes from?
Boy, that's a really good question. Probably my mother. She instilled in me at a young age to always keep pushing forward. And I also think it's an instinctive thing that you can't be taught. I think some people just have an innate ambition, a never say take no for an answer quality about them. And I think I've always had an edge of that. I've been able to pick myself up and dust myself off a lot.
Well, I've had the privilege of spending a few evenings with you, and I think that in addition to what you just said, one of the reasons you're so resilient is because deep down, deep down inside you, you know your talent. You know you have talent. You know you're special.
I would agree with that.
And I think that's so important in terms of self-esteem and confidence and resilience to know that a rejection is just the opinion of one person.
Absolutely. And I try to have tried to pass that on to my kids too, that because there's rejection in everything we do. And some people just have thicker skins than others. And but I think in show business, you better be able to pick yourself up and dust yourself off a couple of hundred times a week because, yeah, you're only listening to other people's opinions. It doesn't necessarily make it truth.
And even when some of those people are renowned, and I'm referring now to Clive Davis, who I used to have the greatest respect for, but he turned down through the years because he didn't think it was right for Barry Manilow. That is beyond belief. So I got to ask you, Steve, did you ever hear from Clive Davis after Kenny Rogers made the song a number one hit?
Yes, I did actually. I ran into him and he congratulated me. And when I was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, he was one of the first people to congratulate me for the body of work. And I, to be perfectly honest, he probably doesn't remember passing on the song. Or maybe he heard the demo, which was me at the piano, and it wasn't a produced demo, it didn't have much production at all. And, the guy listens to 100 songs a day by 100 different songwriters. So he might have had a bad day or an off day. You just don't know.
And didn't you feel inclined just slightly to give him an I told you so?
No, but I have his rejection letter hanging on my wall that I get to look at every day. So, and just kind of chuckle.
I mean, that was a number one song, and it would have been great for Barry Manilow.
That's who we originally pitched it to. We also pitched it to Glen Campbell, and Glen stopped me midway through the first chorus and said, "No, not for me." You just never know.
No, it's very, very baffling, mind-boggling. And many artists have told me, Steve, that no matter how successful they are, they really believe the job they just finished is going to be the last job they ever get. They'll never work again. Do you ever feel that way?
Oh, all the time, all the time. Every time I do a project, I go, well, I'm never going to get another call. But I just think that's an inherent thing in show business. I've heard a lot of actors tell me that too. Actor friends that say, yeah, that'll be the last movie. I fooled him one more time, you know.
Well, that's the imposter syndrome, but I can't imagine you would feel that way. I mean, it's one thing to be a one-hit wonder or maybe to even have two or three hit songs, but when you've had dozens, I can't imagine that you would honestly not be able to reconcile the fact that you really have talent with knowing that you will get more work.
Well, yeah, I think in any facet of show business or really any business, you have to have talent. You have to be at the right place at the right time. So there is a bit of serendipity to this business.
Have you ever thought in your mind how much of your success is attributable to talent and relationships, and how much of it was good luck and timing and just being at the right place at the right time?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of it, but if you don't, at the end of the day, if the song's not great, it doesn't matter how much luck you have or who you know, it's not going to happen. It's got to be the right marriage between the right song and the right artist. That element of getting that right song to the right person, for instance, Kenny Rogers doing Through the Years, and Murray finally taking I Just Fall in Love Again and releasing it so it became the hit. That's serendipity to me, not so much luck. It's just something in the universe that just happens.
Steve, I want to take you back to June 14th, 2018, New York City. You were inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. What was going through your mind when you accepted that great honor?
The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for a songwriter. It's the acknowledgement that you've had a career of over 20 years of creating really good work, not being a one-hit wonder. It's just, and the fact that Irving Berlin and the Gershwins and Burt Bacharach and Hal David and Lennon and McCartney and Elton John and Bernie Taupin and so many of my heroes are in there. There's hundreds of thousands of songwriters, and yet there are only 430 of us that are in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I mean, that's pretty daunting.
It's monumental. And when I read in your book about that night, I kept thinking to myself how proud your parents must be wherever they are.
I'm sure. Well, they were deceased, but I'm sure they knew it.
I am too. Now, rumor has it, Steve, that you're writing music for a brand new movie called Without Prejudice, which is a story about someone I happen to know very well. Can you tell us anything about how that's going?
Yeah, it's going well. I've actually got a theme, a piano theme that I came up with the other day. Right now it's called Harvey, but it will probably become titled Without Prejudice. There's a great song that Michael Jay and Sam Hollander and I have written. We are in production on with Sam Bailey, who's a phenomenal British woman talent singer who won X Factor in UK, who is singing it. And we hope to have that finished shortly after the first of the year. And then I'm just waiting to see a first cut of the movie.
Well, I'm, as you can imagine, very excited about it. I hope you will come back on our show to talk about it when the movie comes out.
Absolutely. And maybe I'll use a computer so my phone won't be shaking and people won't think they're experiencing an earthquake.
Now, we're filming this interview during the holiday season, so I can't resist mentioning one of my all-time favorite Christmas songs that you wrote with Alan Rich, Make It Christmas, recorded by Rodney Carrington and also by Lisa Donaghy. I just want to thank you so much for giving us such a beautiful Christmas song.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's funny too, because I just found another one that I did in 2006 with Christopher Cross called The Best Christmas. And in fact, I just put it on my Facebook page this morning because I had forgotten that song and heard it by accident on the radio yesterday. And I thought, let me pull that up on YouTube, and sure enough, it's there. So I just put it on my Facebook page, and it's funny. The songs have no expiration date. You know, great songs just live and live and live, and it's always fun for me to hear stuff that I've either forgotten about or got reminded of. Like you reminded me of a song that I had totally forgotten about. Any Kind of Fool that Melissa Manchester recorded, and a song that just came out by Ann Murray. You know, they just put out a brand new album of Ann's, which I believe is number one in Canada now. And it had a song on there that I had forgotten I wrote and didn't even know she recorded it, called Heaven in My Heart. So you just never, you never know.
That is by far the best song on the album. It's the first song on the album, which I have. And I was thrilled when I found out you were the one that wrote it, because I think it's the best song on the album.
Oh, thanks.
I also want to mention to you, as you know, I do a lot of research. And when I was pouring through your body of work, I came across another absolutely beautiful song you wrote with Tina Schaefer. It's called The Backyard Sky. Mm-hmm. She recorded it. I have to say, Steve, anybody who's ever lost a loved one should have that song on their playlist, because it's got such a healing energy about it. It's one of your most healing songs.
Thank you. It's one of my very favorite songs that I've ever written. And it's the only song I've ever written with Tina. And I always dedicate it to my late son, Andrew, and her late brother. And that's where that song came from.
May they rest in peace, and may their memories always be a blessing. I want to tell you something, Steve. One of your songs is called You Set My Dreams to Music. But if I were writing a song about you, it would be called You Set My Life to Music.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's also one of my favorites. You know, that song has been recorded, I think, 30, 40 times by everyone from Tom Jones to Glenn Campbell to Ann Murray, John Travolta, and Jerry Corbetta of Sugarloaf. I mean, so many versions of that song, and never a hit. Was never a hit. Dusty recorded it as well. You just, you never know. These things have a life of their own.
And they may not be hits in the traditional definition, but when a song is on someone's playlist and they play it a lot because they love it, to me, for that person, that song is a hit.
Right.
Well,
right.
Steve, it's been such a pleasure having this opportunity to interview you and celebrating your magnificent career, your body of work. Thank you for the countless hours of joy and comfort you've brought to music lovers all over the world. And most of all, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thanks, Harvey. I was really looking forward to this and look forward to seeing you soon in the new year.
I can't wait. Our guest has been the legendary songwriter and composer Steve Dorff. His book, entitled I Wrote That One Too, is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. For more information about Mr. Dorff and to purchase his music, his book, and other merchandise, please visit his official website, stevedorff.com. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli of the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my editor, Isaiah Sharalampadis, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.